Many public radio stations are fundraising this week and are using this time for a pledge break. For those of you hearing our show uninterrupted, we continue with our special series from our rock historian Ed Ward on the American cities that gave us rock and roll. Today we feature New Orleans. New Orleans was more than the cradle of jazz. It was a city that considered musical education essential, particularly for its black citizens. Decades after Louis Armstrong, several generations of musicians gave us an idiosyncratic and distinctive version of rock and roll.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans.
Post-war popular music in New Orleans started the night Lou Chud, a successful producer of records for the Mexican-American market, walked into the Bronze Peacock Club in Houston, Texas, and saw Dave Bartholomew and his band on stage. Chud had been thinking of getting into the rhythm and blues game and found Bartholomew quite knowledgeable about the New Orleans scene, so he put him on retainer, and the hit started coming out of Cosimo Matassa's New Orleans studio. His first big discovery was Antoine Fats Domino, an amiable piano player who remained Chud's meal ticket for over a decade. Chud may have been a hard guy to work for. Bartholomew quarreled with him from time to time, and during one of their estrangements, he agreed to produce a session for Art Roop, who owned L.A.'s specialty label.
Oh, now, Lordy, 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 Miss Claudia, girl, you sure look good to me. Well, please don't excite me, baby. No, it can't be me. Because I give...
He even used Fats Domino on piano for Lloyd Price's Lottie Miss Claudie, which tore up the charts in 1952. But Roop needed his own man there, and soon found Richard Bumps Blackwell. Blackwell, in turn, found him another piano player. Little Richard, for all his weirdness, turned out to be just what Roop needed, and soon Blackwell was minting gold with him. Just as important as the front men on these recordings were the backup guys. The first generation of New Orleans studio musicians included people like drummer Earl Palmer, whose no-nonsense beat more or less defined black rock and roll, and saxophonist Lee Allen, who wrote the rules for those short solos every rock and roll record had to have. But New Orleans has never treated its black talent with much respect, and at one point a fracas within the musicians' union saw virtually the entire studio crew pick up and leave for Los Angeles. This wasn't as big a tragedy as it might have seemed, though. It just gave the next generation of players a chance. Chief among them was yet another piano player, Alan Toussaint, who assembled a band that recorded with people like Irma Thomas for Lou Chud and, most famously, with Lee Dorsey.
My uncle there was a passing me. She got a whole lot of rhythm when she walk, and I can hear music when she talk. Dore mi fa sol la ti. Forget about the do and think about me. Dore mi.
There was also a young white guitar player named Mac Rebinac, who was helping out wherever he could find a gig and coming up with the odd rockabilly track.
Standing on the front porch, I grabbed her and kissed her. What was I surprised when I saw her little sister? Lights out. Lights out. I'm glad now that the lights are out. Sister knows more about what to do when the lights go out. Mother looked at me, she was a peep.
But New Orleans has really always been about black music, and Rebenack, who was defined solo fame as Dr. John, spent most of his time working with rhythm and blues stars. Along with Rebenack, there was a family of musicians in New Orleans who divided their time between being studio musicians and recording under a bunch of different names. Sometimes they were the Hawks, sometimes they were Art Neville and his band, and much later, towards the end of the 60s, they were the Meters. To their mother, of course, they were just the Neville brothers, whose inimitable grooves helped pave the way for funk. There were many other important musicians in New Orleans during the early 60s, but by the decade's end, the only ones making real impact on the national charts were Lee Dorsey and the Meters. Many of the rest had left town or retired, disgusted with the city's disregard for their talents. A step to change this began in the 70s with the first New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, but the vibrant scene was long gone. Today, New Orleans music is a relic, and the light has gone out. Fortunately, it's still widely available in recorded form.
Ed Ward is a writer living in Berlin. Tomorrow, we move to Memphis. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.